Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, our conversation with Dr. Lee Merritt. They call her the medical rebel, a fact-first conversation about what is happening with the Chinese coronavirus, hydroxychloroquine, and the vaccine. Now, this conversation would be classified as a thought crime. But if you want to be informed against medical tyranny, this is the episode for you. And look, I just got to tell you, if you believe everything that Fauci's been telling you, this is not the episode for you. If you believe all of the one-liners on TV, this is not the episode for you. But if you all of a sudden think that there's something deeper at play here, then I really encourage you to listen carefully. And also, we are one of the few conservative podcasts that would have someone like Dr. Merritt on, because we are not satisfied sitting idly by and allowing lies to be spread without you hearing the truth. There are so many other podcasts out there, not going to name any names, so many other people that are pushing the vaccine, that are refusing to talk about what's really happening here. And you know our position on this program. We are not going to tell you to do something or not do something. We just want to make sure you have all the information. I'm not one to tell you to make medical decisions, but here we have today a medical doctor. She served in the United States Navy, 9 years as a Navy physician, appointed a Louis A. Goldstein Fellow of Spinal Surgery. Then she served on the board of Arizona Medical Association and the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and she has been fellowship certified by the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. And so we're going to dive deep into this with her, but I want to thank those of you that support us that allow these types of conversations to happen. At charliekirk.com/support, people like Jacqueline from Newport Beach, you make this happen when you support us at charliekirk.com/support. John from Phoenix, thank you so much for your generous support. Natalie from Frisco, Texas, very generous support. Thank you at charliekirk.com/support. So Natalie and John, let me tell you what happens when you support us. We can hire more staff. We can keep the staff we already have on, and it allows us to go into these stories that sometimes the big corporate advertisers don't want to hear us go into. You know how easy this would have been for this program to just go to the federal government and take vaccine awareness money? You know there are hundreds of millions of dollars that were appropriated to go peddle the vaccine? And we refused it. We rejected it. We said, we're not going to do that. And so if you guys want to support us independently, it's charliekirk.com/support. We're very touched by your support and very blessed by it. So thank you for doing that. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war. Go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. And if you want to get involved in Turning Point Faith, go to tpusa.com/faith. That's tpusa.com/faith. I love hearing from you directly, and make sure you are subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. Make sure that that subscribe button is pushed. Type in Charlie Kirk Show on your Apple Podcasts and hit subscribe. Here we go. Dr. Merritt, thought crimes incoming, but we have the truth for you. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. With us today is Dr. Lee Merritt, who has a website, drleemerritt.com, the medical rebel, and she has been one of the most outspoken doctors in the country talking about what's really going on with the Chinese coronavirus, this mass inoculation strategy, and more. Dr. Merritt, welcome to the show. Before I throw it over to you, I want to just read some of your bio just to establish your credibility, because that's the way a lot of this happens now today, right? Which is can you argue from authority? And the answer is yes. Dr. Merritt has been in private practice of orthopedic and spinal surgery since 1995. Before that, she served 9 years as a Navy physician and surgeon before returning to Rochester, where she was the only woman to be appointed as a Lewis A. Goldstein Fellow of Spinal Surgery. I could go through your incredible biography, but pretty good career in medicine. And so it's going to make this conversation very interesting. Doctor, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Well, thank you. My honor to be here.
So you have been speaking out quite a lot. It's hard to kind of choose where to start. So let's just start kind of at the beginning. When did you first get very concerned about how we were reacting to this Chinese coronavirus last year? Walk us through kind of your commentary and all that. We'll go from there.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not a trauma surgeon anymore. I was semi-retired and just working a few days a week doing elective surgery. So when this broke out and they shut down the hospitals, even before we went into that lockdown, I was sitting home kind of doing nothing. And I had been alerted to looking at this one from a friend of mine who used to work at USAMRIT, our bioweapons lab. So call it what you will. That's what it is. So I'd been following this since almost mid-December, and it was looking pretty bad. And then I also was on, I was fortunate enough through organizations and stuff, I got on an email page with people, and it started out with about six people, but one of them was Didier Raoul from France, you know, and then it added people. And so I was kind of just a little quiet member on this big group email, but it turned out that that very early on, maybe even before I got in with all those people, the Chinese were talking about using chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. The Koreans, you know, that had been used with SARS. And so this was starting to come out. And people were sending around these papers, these old papers, way back to talk about this. And I started reading them. And many of us came to the conclusion, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. We got this, you know. And then suddenly it turned a corner. And at first I thought, oh, it's just because now, a month after we heard about it and kind of had been thinking about, you know, we need to stock up on this stuff. People need to start using it. Trump mentioned it. And then it seemed to go south. And I thought, oh, they just hate Trump. Orange man bad. That's what this is. But then I started during that period of time and hearing what they were saying to discourage the use of hydroxychloroquine, I realized that's not what I've been reading, because I've been reading the scientific literature now. So I started going from paper to paper to paper. And anyway, I followed the trail all the way back to 1974 that they knew about chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine for the use of these kinds of problems for viral issues. And I said, really? And then I found a paper that said that chloroquine was a potent inhibitor of influenza A in vitro, meaning they knew this stuff could treat influenza. I said, oh, it's not Trump. They don't want to take their $69 billion vaccine industry and reduce it to zero if they have a treatment like this. So that's what I thought it was. Well, then it started becoming a little more questionable to me whether this was actually a virus or a bioweapon when I saw the way that things were going. And that's changed it. But I ended up writing a paper about the hydroxychloroquine. That's how it all started.
Yeah. So that's so helpful. Let's just ask some basic terms. Is it your opinion that this virus is a bioweapon developed by the Chinese?
It's a bioweapon. It's not just developed by the Chinese. I will tell you, there's a lot of, if you want to really go, the other thing I did during that period of time, I wrote a timeline and started tracing from place to place. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to point fingers at people, it can go all over, including at us. You know, there's no question this was lab manipulated. And in fact, you know, the question is who released it, when, and why. I mean, I think we even could say when, around October 19th, which was the same day for two events. It was the same day as Event 201, but the one they never talk about is the World Military Games held in Wuhan that started the same date. You know, I always look now for things that haven't been mentioned or people that names that you never hear. That's kind of a sign. But anyway, there's no question it's been manipulated, and that there are people that were working on bat coronavirus or whatever this turns out to be, a piece of the bat genome, at least, that has been changed to hook into our ACE2 pathway to make it deadly or at least disease producing in humans. Now, there's so much evidence that it's a bioweapon. And I think one of the best reviews of this, you can go to Stephen Quayle, and he goes through the Bayesian analysis of this, but he tells you about all the things you look at. And quite frankly, and I knew many of them, you know, there are things that we look at to see if this is from nature. Can we, for example, can we take this so-called SARS-CoV-2 and reinfect bats? And the answer is no. If it came out of bats, it might have to change a little bit, but it shouldn't have to change its whole personality to get back. So we can't reinfect bats. They've never found it in any animal in the Wuhan meat market, including the stupid pangolin. When they dragged that out, I knew we were desperate, you know, to find an excuse. So it fails the kind of all the cardinal signs of a natural disease. Okay. The thing that worries me the most is we're not treating it like we would any other real pandemic. So it makes you, there's a lot of suspicion to be going around, but there were many labs, including the Louis Pasteur lab, probably for sure, the Winnipeg lab in Canada, Ralph Barrick's lab in North Carolina, and then the Wuhan lab.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Have you heard of shrinkflation? Shrinkflation is where your candy bar or your burger gets smaller, but the price stays the same. Have you noticed this? It's happening all the time, everywhere now. But the government insists that inflation is under control. Or is that just temporary? What do you think? This is inflation's evil cousin by the back door. Now, you need a hedge against inflation. You need physical assets you can touch, things that cannot be created in the printing press. Now, Noble Gold is ahead of the game. They know that with a precious metal IRA under your belt, you'll hedge these rising prices so you can retire without worrying about it. You'll keep up with the inflation the folks in Washington are trying to hide. And this month, to thank you, you'll get your precious metal project off to a flying start. Noble Gold is giving you a free 5-ounce solid silver American the Beautiful bullion coin with every qualifying IRA or 401k rollover. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com or call 877-646-5347. That's 877-646-5347.
So let's kind of go from there. That's how we're treating it. So the consensus amongst America's rulers has been changing, and it seems as if there's always a profit incentive. Let's just start with the big one that's impacting everyone's lives, and then we can get to masks and lockdowns, because I think the lockdown one we understand pretty well. It's just so silly. The vaccine. What is this vaccine? What is incorporated in it? Who developed it? Should people be worried about this? Should they be suspicious of it? And just kind of go through it from an ABC nature, because we have people listening to this right now that are still trying to make up their mind. They're not really sure what's going on.
Well, you know, it's striking to me that Americans would spend more time researching a new car line before they bought one than taking a vaccine that's made out of synthetic DNA or synthetic RNA and can change your genetic makeup forever. I mean, come on, this is serious stuff we're dealing with here. And this isn't a vaccine. We actually found the term for it. It's a viral-based genetic therapies. These things had been working in development for decades as cancer drugs or gene therapies. They could never meet the safety standard. They could never reach the bar for safety. And so now, by declaring them suddenly a vaccine, they're indemnified. Now they could be safe and up for marketing. That should comfort people. But it's the same devices. And these, what they do is they've taken a small amount of genetic material and they wrapped it in a lipoprotein coat. And they are injecting it into us in such a way that it produces the actual spike protein that causes your genetic material or that your machinery to then produce literally trillions of copies of the spike protein, which then go all over the body. Now, that's the theory, is that then you'll get immune to the spike protein. Just the theory of that, in my opinion, is crazy, regardless of the other stuff that's in it and how it actually functions. Because, you know, in nature, and some of this is hard to talk about, because one of the things we've learned is that there may not be viruses the way we talk about them. So just for the moment's conversation, I'm going to mention viruses as if they really are just like we were taught. What we used to do was we would give you a small piece of the virus, and then it would just be a very, very tiny piece, and it would not go all over your body. It would be local, and you would then recognize it. Your immune systems would see it, memorize it, go out and tell your other immune system parts, to remember this so that if it ever shows up again, you can take it out. That's how the old time immune system or the old time vaccines work. This works by actually kind of hijacking your cells to produce the very pathogen that made us sick with COVID. Now, first of all, let's just talk about who it's hitting and who the vaccine is damaging right away from that. If you're young and you're healthy and you've got a good immune system, you got a better chance of fighting off that onslaught of spike protein all over your body. But think if you're old and feeble. You know, you have to suddenly mobilize to deal with trillions of spike protein all over your body, and you can't always do it. And this is why in Israel, they found that if you took, this was early on, after there were only 12.5% of people vaccinated when these numbers came out, but they were independently reviewed by Dr. Seligman in Marseille, France, who's an epidemiologist. And he said, don't believe the 95% effective rate. You know, he didn't say that was propaganda, but I'll say, when you see that number, that's a propaganda number. What he said was, in that, looking at that group of people, if you're over 65 and you take the vaccine, your chance of dying COVID went up 40 times than if you hadn't taken the vaccine. And that's the reason. That's the reason. It's, you know, in whether it exactly works this way or not, what we think is viruses, when they attack you, they normally come in a few virions, just a couple. It doesn't need a lot. Come into your nose or your eyes or your gut or someplace. And then they start getting attached and start growing. And during that period of time, your body has a chance to try and ward them off, right? It sends out the early troops, you know, the shock troops. And if you're young, that's why little kids don't have to worry about this and they don't transmit it, because their immune system's on high burn. They just go in and they just wipe this out. But the 65-year-old might not be able to, or the 85-year-old. So what happens in those cases is, you know, they go in and they try to stop the invasion, but some of the invaders get past them and then they get deeper in the body. And because this has been designed not to just be the common cold, which is what every other coronavirus is for the most part, this one actually goes into your brain, your lungs, your ovaries, your kidneys, everything. I mean, it's got the ACE2 pathways are everywhere. So it goes in and it starts getting a real deep hold into your body. And then some people die because they cannot fend it off. Well, now think about doing that process, but when you take the vaccine, you're not getting just a small 4 or 5 virion dose in your nose. Now you're getting trillions of them sent to you. And that's why we're seeing sudden death. You know, how many people, I think, to be honest, I don't know anybody that doesn't know somebody that's died or been disabled from the vaccine. And, you know, my friend is one of the people I hear the story of quite frequently, who just didn't wake up after, you know, one day. You know, within 4 days of the vaccine, just didn't wake up one morning. And that's not uncommon. And unfortunately, a lot of those cases are getting missed in the documentation, but that's the way this is supposed to work. In theory, it's supposed to do what it's actually doing, but it's causing a huge amount of problems.
So I have so many questions about that. And thank you. That was really helpful. I guess then the immediate question is, if it's not a vaccine and it's a viral-based gene therapy, how are they able to get away with calling it a vaccine? Wouldn't there be somebody in some institution that has reviewed this and has either blown the whistle or called this out?
I think there would have had it been rolled out in a traditional fashion. But if you gin up a crisis and then you go to solve the crisis, you can push through an emergency use authorization. And that's what happened. And what that does is it stops oversight, cuts down. They don't, in an emergency use authorization, it really speeds up the process. So you don't have to do all the studies. You don't have to do everything. And you don't even have to tell us what's in it, except the part that you're claiming is the part that is doing the job. In other words, I could have put a million other things in this agent. But as long as I tell you about the RNA that produces the spike protein and the coating that it's in that helps maneuver it around the body, I don't really have to tell you the rest.
So what would be the possible argument then? Because, I mean, I went to a doctor recently because we talked off air about something that's annoying. And thankfully, they were more enlightened on this than most. But even a little bit, they were like, oh, well, you know, the vaccine has done a lot of good for a lot of people. I mean, it seems as if, doctor, that we're just living in these parallel universes. How is this possible in a society where we have dialogue and speech? I mean, we're not living in Kabul, right? At least I hope we're not. where, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Like, this is so hard for me to kind of just as a normal person that doesn't really know the details we're talking about as well, how you could have people in the same field have such completely different opinions of something that should be rather simple.
You would think so. And I have to say, you know, I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and I have to say, during much of my career, I was taught about vaccines in medical school, and that's an interesting point. We were taught a different story than the kids today. But anyway, I was taught about vaccines in medical school, and then I never was in that field. So I never really looked at the data myself. The only thing that changed me, the thing that changed me about vaccines and the what was going on was when a couple things happened. I was in the Navy. I was out of the Navy, but I was in the Navy Research Advisory Committee. It's a congressional committee, and by law, they have to have a doctor on it. And I just happened to be going around when they were researching Gulf War Syndrome. And I discovered that they had just figured out that the Gulf War Syndrome was caused by one batch of the anthrax vaccine. It was shoved through on emergency use authorization, and it turned out they had an experimental adjuvant. An adjuvant is just a chemical that non-specifically stimulates your immune system so they don't have to use as much of the pathogen. So it makes it cheaper to produce and quicker. So they had just started this for the first time. They used an adjuvant called squalene, and it turned out that all the Gulf War Syndrome came from that batch of anthrax vaccine. Well, then years later, I discovered that they put that anthrax, or they used that squalene again. They took it out of all the vaccines, or they promised they weren't going to use it, but they put it in the 2017 flu ad. Okay. I mean, this is a bet. My neighbor was one of those vets that got this vaccine in the Gulf War, and he keeps getting a letter that says, make sure you tell us about any neurologic changes because you're at four times the risk of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which is Lou Gehrig's disease, a fatal neurologic disease, than the background people, you know, the people that didn't get vaccinated. So you have free Veterans Administration care if you need it. Just come and see us for neurologic problems. Now, the irony is he works at the VA. He works in the OR. And so what happened? They made him get this vaccine. And guess what this vaccine has got in it? Yes, you guessed it, squalene. And it's not labeled as squalene. That's what they do. When they put it, and they put it back in the flu ad in 2017, it was labeled its lab number MF59.
Wow.
Which kind of sounds like an El Salvadorian drug gang. So your doctor, even if he's well-meaning, wouldn't know that unless he really researched it. And so my point about all this is I stumbled into some skepticism about the whole vaccine programs because of that. But subsequently, I've researched like the basic flu vaccine because of the mandates for flu being in the hospital. And it's also, if you look at the data yourself, you get a different perspective. So you're talking to a surgeon or somebody that's not his field, and they're being told this by the guys in the hospital. So then you have to say, why is that happening? Why is nobody really looking at the data and looking at what's happening in the rest of the world? Well, thanks to what's been going on, the hospitals have been paid a lot of money by the NIH, and they're basically controlled, and there is a controlled narrative in the NIH. So they can only talk to you about certain things. I suspect your doctor is just an innocent victim of that. He's not trying to lie to you, but he doesn't know.
I think it's amazing. I mean, you think about it, you have massive medical institutions that have just been corrupted, and it's the opposite of what science really needs to be. And so I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. So these vaccines have the same component part that caused the Gulf War Syndrome. Is that right?
Well, one of them, the squalene is in, they call it an adjuvant, but really matrix called Matrix M. Don't you love it? That's the coating around. It's a lipoprotein nanoparticle, lipid nanoparticle, LNP coating around the genetic material. And squalene is in that apparently.
Wow.
Some of this is only because some people have squeaked out. There are other things you're probably hearing about, the graphene, just all sorts of aluminum and stuff that's in there that we just, you know, we won't know. They're supposed to tell us at some point what's in there, but we don't know now.
Charlie Kirk here, and I've warned you about home title theft, where cyber thieves remove you from your home's title and you become the owner. I said you better get home title lock because it's coming. Well, if you're on Facebook, that big breach is here.
Facebook had 500 million accounts exposed to cyber thieves. And according to a retired FBI cybercrime expert, everything thieves need to take over as the new owner of your home was leaked. Name, address, personal information, it's out there. The thief forges your signature on a quitclaim deed stating you sold your home to him. He'll leave you in debt or he'll even have you evicted. Do what I did and protect your home's title with Home Title Lock. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then sign up for 30 free days of protection during this high-risk breach. Then sign up for 30 free days of protection. Again, HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio. That's HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio. So do you think there will be other side effects because of the vaccine, in your professional opinion, that are going to pop up at years go by?
Oh, yeah. There's multi phases of death and destruction here. I mean, we're seeing, first of all, one of the things we know is in this vaccine is PEG, polyethylene glycol. It's never been used in a vaccine before. Well, it's in a lot of other things like, I don't know, household cleaning things, I guess, and soaps and oils and things. And so 70% of people have some allergy to it. That's one of the reasons they're saying these vaccines produce 10 times the anaphylaxis rate of the other vaccines we've ever had, meaning that's the kind of sudden, I can't breathe, you know, drop over right after you get the injection. And we've seen pictures and pictures and pictures on the internet of that. And we know about it in our places of work. So that's just one thing. So another thing is right away, we're seeing interesting, weird things like thrombocytopenia. Now, I got interested and I wrote a paper on this about the blood. This is before we really knew about the blood clotting. The first thing we knew about was the bleeding. And the thrombocytopenia. Thrombocytes are the little parts of your blood that plug up the hole so you don't spontaneously bleed. Well, not that I just care about other doctors, but when my ears perked up when I heard about this 56-year-old male surgeon down in Florida who was perfectly healthy, took the first vaccine of the Pfizer vaccine, or took a first shot of the Pfizer vaccine, and 4 days later started having like bleeding in his gums and things happened to him, goes to the hospital, he's in the hospital, gets a blood test, he has zero platelets. Now, you're supposed to have over 200,000 to 500,000, you know, something in that range. He had zero. Now, that's not something we usually see. There are disorders that are due to low platelets, and they can happen after vaccines or viruses or lots of different things. But they usually don't kill you this quickly. And he basically was dead in 12 days of a brain bleed. They couldn't. Now, here's a guy in his own hospital. Trust me, they couldn't. They tried everything to save him. Normally, you could give people platelets for these kinds of disorders, but not in the people all the time that we're seeing, not all the people we're seeing in here. So I started looking around and I found there were 365 cases of spontaneous bleeding associated with the vaccines, the Pfizer vaccine, specifically mostly that, because it was by the time I got done with this, middle of February when I started looking at it. So now when I went to back, by the way, when I went to back to look at the renewed numbers to get the publication, it was like 6,500 in 1 month had gone up. So this is a lot of people. And what's happening is you get your vaccine, you're 75 years old, and then 3 days later, you found on your floor and you've had a massive hemorrhage, massive bleed into your brain. It doesn't always get realized. It doesn't always become realized it had anything to do with the vaccine because 75-year-olds get brain bleeds. But I think people are starting to wake up and realize there is an association. There's lots of abnormalities of menstrual cycles, unusual vaginal bleeding, GI bleeds. In other words, bleeding out from the, you know, through the rectum, and just several of them, just massive bleeding, so massive they couldn't figure out before the patient died where that was from. Ocular bleeds into the eye that you can't see out of one eye suddenly, or into your cerebellum or your occipital lobe. So suddenly you're dizzy or you can't see out of your eye because you've got a brain bleed, not an eye bleed, over and over. I mean, this is all over the place. And that, again, another really bad one we're seeing that's coming out quickly early on is the myocarditis. And you've heard about that in young people. Now that's a really, it shows you, here's the risk. You know, everything's a risk benefit. So there's nothing in life without a risk. I get that. But here's an example. And I happen to know the actual numbers in the military, so I'm going to cite those. In all of 2020, there were only 20 military members dead of COVID. In 2021 so far, we've had 600 myocarditis cases attributable to the vaccine. So that given the mortality rate, we've killed 365, 370 people in the military with the vaccine versus the 20 that COVID killed. That's a risk-benefit analysis that should have been done before we started this. And we didn't have data because they had no long-term studies in humans. That's the failure here. But you can go on and on. And I'll just mention one more, and that's cancer. You know, they admit that to get this so-called vaccine, these experimental unapproved genetic agents into us, they had to decrease our innate immunity. And everybody who's been following along knows this true without reading any real science. If you got COVID and you had antibodies, you could donate your plasma and help other people. That was been going on. But if you got COVID, got the antibodies, were perfectly healthy and took the vaccine, it wiped out that natural immunity. Now you cannot donate your own plasma. So anybody can check that. But wow. And how stupid is that? I mean, let's just think about it. I have perfect God-given immunity now to this disease. And it's really, as they say, as the experts in immunology say, it's robust tissue immunity. That's real immunity, not just, and I'm wiping that out and then giving you a little synthetic, you know, antibody-based immunity thing. It's crazy. But in the process of doing that, they're dumbing down your immune system in general. And what's happening is cancers are showing up all over the place. I had go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Well, I had a cardiologist tell me that he's seen, I don't know, 20 or 25 of these rare cancers in the last 2 months, and he's only seen two in his whole 20-year career.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing happening.
I'm hearing a lot of stories like that. So I want to talk about other treatments, because for whatever reason, we just are not allowed to talk about ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. Talk about how effective they can be and are. And we just repeat it all the time on our show, one of the few ones that do. And I'm not getting vaccinated, by the way. And I'm, you know, you get attacked for even saying that's like kind of creepy. Like, I'm not going to tell you my medical decisions, actually, but whatever. Can you talk about that, about ivermectin, sure, hydroxychloroquine? How did we just get so sidetracked from talking about actual solutions that could help?
Well, if you believe, I mean, again, this speaks to motive, and they always say in legal terms, you know, you don't have the qualification to speak to motive. But if you believe the motive was ultimately to get us to this genetic agent they're injecting into people, the point is, if you have a treatment, then you cannot get an emergency use authorization for a vaccine. If you have a very effective treatment, you cannot say you need an emergency use authorization. So what is, and so they couldn't admit these things worked, or they couldn't get the vaccine rush through EUA. That's one fact. Another factor here is that hospitals are getting liability given to them by the pharmaceutical agents, but only if they stick to the narrative that they can only use the NIH-approved therapy. So you can use remdesivir, which has also got, you know, like a 20% renal toxicity problem and some other things. You can use remdesivir. You can, Regeneron, but you cannot talk about hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. No, you'll lose your indemnity. So there's pressure on these people. But in terms of it working, in August of 2020, I gave a speech out in Las Vegas, and I looked at the world's death rate. I looked all over the place. And keep in mind, overall, we lose 0.76% of the population every year, and we lost 0.76% last year. So it wasn't a gross big number of people that died in excess. But I not only do you want to know how risky it is, you want to know where's the safest place in the world. So I looked around and I found out the highest death rate in the world last year from COVID was New York State, where I trained. So 0.17%, which still means, you know, again, when you're looking at taking a vaccine that's experimental and risky, this is a 99.83% survival rate, even in the worst place in the world last year. So that was the worst place, 0.17%. And guess where the best place was? Uganda. Okay. Not a place we attribute, you know, fancy medicine to, but it was 0.00004%. Now, even giving them some break, people always say, well, but they probably don't report things there. Okay, but this is a 10,000 times improvement, okay? I think there's room for wiggle room there. So they're 10,000 times less likely to die in Uganda, and it's also true in Senegal and Nigeria and Taiwan. And now India, at the end of last year, had, I think, a third of the deaths that we did, and yet they're three times our population. So really, what's going on here? Well, in Uganda and Senegal and those places in Africa, they are free enough to walk down to the corner store and purchase hydroxychloroquine over the counter. No getting a doctor, no waiting in line. So they automatically gave themselves early treatment. When they started feeling bad, they just routinely do that. So that's probably the answer there. If you look at countries that, if there was a study done around the world and it looked at the countries that routinely used hydroxychloroquine early and often, hydroxychloroquine, versus those that didn't, like the United States. And the death rate at first was 75% roughly lower in those countries. It's come down, I think, to about 70% overall now, but it's still, they're doing better. That's a pretty good study. And, you know, that's the study they tried to discredit with the fake study they reported in the Lancet and New England Journal of Medicine, where the data was being collected by an adult content model and a science fiction writer. That's and it was right. A fake storefront, right? You can't make that up.
And it has been discredited. And the people who said it early on were not taken seriously as far as like talking, exposing it. And now everything that they said about the study ended up being true.
Yeah. So the problem is, the headlines of the New England Journal saying it didn't work has discouraged people all over the country in academic medicine. All they have to do is see a headline in the New England Journal and it's done, man. So it was a con game there. It really was. You can't think of that as anything but a takedown. So that's one of the reasons we have there's so much evidence. There's over 200 peer-reviewed papers now showing that hydroxychloroquine works, over 83, maybe more now on ivermectin. Now, ivermectin seems to be working later in the course of the disease. And that's how like Pierre Corey and people that work in the ICU with sicker people, that seems to be a very critical drug for them. It can really turn them around. So, amazing. But it's crazy that we're not using them, but this is why.
20 years ago, our world changed. We lost thousands of lives that horrific morning in September over the last 20 years. With chaos ensuing, brave men and women in our first responder communities answered the call and rushed into the unknown as we watched in horror as the morning unfolded before our very eyes. 343 firefighters lost their lives that day, and almost all our first responders who answered that call have perished since. We here at The Charlie Kirk Show are proud to partner with Minutemen Coffee, a company that is unapologetically patriotic and constitutionally based, who honors all our men and women who serve and have served in the amazing country that we call home. The morning of September 12th, America came together as one to honor all who lost their lives that day and in the days and weeks and years to come. I'm excited to announce that the official coffee provider for this program, Minutemen Coffee, is proud to partner with the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation 9/11 Tribute Roast. The patriots at Minutemen do not just want to honor those lost lives that morning, but want to honor all our first responders and military servicemen and women who have perished since 9/11. They're seeking to raise awareness of the fact that they put their lives on the line for all of us, no matter where you live. Anywhere in this country, there are firefighters, medics, and LEOs that have dedicated their lives to protecting and serving ours. We're proud to join Minutemen Coffee in giving back to those who have sacrificed so much for us and so many. So join us in producing the 9/11 Tribute Coffee, and all the net proceeds will be raised to benefit those heroes and the amazing foundation this serves. Go to MinutemenCoffee.com, promo code Charlie. MinutemenCoffee.com, promo code Charlie. So now I want to talk about masks. It's now the new thing to put masks on everybody. Talk about what the data says about masks. Talk about how they might be harmful. I mean, it's so frustrating, doctor, just to go through this all over again. So why are masks a bad idea all over again?
Don't wear the mask. You know, this isn't, masks are not about containing a virus. Masks are about controlling you. From time immemorial, masks were signs of submission, obedience. I will be silent. I will transform myself. This is what it means in the occult and the slaves wore masks. Okay. We never in my entire 40 years of medicine ever talked about masks being useful for airborne diseases other than viruses, you know, we used them for tuberculosis, which is a completely different kind of disease. You know, people always say to me, but you're a surgeon. You wore a mask all your life. You know, here's what they did. Here's how they taught you in medical school. When you're in surgery and you have a mask on and you think you're going to sneeze, what do? I mean, you want to go like this. You want to go like this. You're not. No. If you do that, you'll blow it right out onto the surgical field. So they say, just lean back, be straight ahead. masks don't, you know, that they're big holes in masks. Masks don't work. Now, paper is the least, you know, the type of masks we wear in surgery are these tie-on masks. And that's the one that you breathe out the side. It's not controlling airflow. It's not hermetically sealed. And there's no studies prior to 2020 to try to even convince you that they worked for this, quite frankly. I thought this would be a slam dunk when I went down to the Omaha City Council to speak for 3 minutes against the mask mandate. Because I was convinced, and I still am, that anybody that believes in them is either being paid or is being played. It just, there's no evidence for this. But they do a lot of damage. This is the real point. And I think this is the real reason that this is such a hot button. I'm just a little doctor in a little place. And my very first time I came out in public speaking for AFLDS, the frontline doctors, was on masks. And McGill University writes this big hit piece about, you know, I don't know anything about the science of masks. Well, I could argue with them on that, but you have to ask why. And the answer is because this whole psychological operation depends on this optic and this fear generating, you know, machine. War item. I believe we're at war, we're not fighting a virus, we're fighting a war. And this is an object of the war, is a stupid mask. It's a huge part of the psychological operation. And it's a war against your children. You know, you and I are old enough that we now know how to read, you know, to what we call read faces, not just recognize faces, but read faces and interact as a human because we're fully formed adults. But children are not. And so you put little children in masks and it damages them psychologically. And that is really, I think, a huge point here. I don't know if you saw that, but there was somebody sent me the picture and it was one of these health department, how to be safe in COVID things in the inside of a New York subway. And it showed two little children. It was a cartoon stick figure, two children, boy and girl. The first one is they're both wearing masks and they're looking at each other. And underneath there, the caption says, worst. And then the next picture, they're looking straight ahead. And then the caption says, better. And then finally, the last picture, two little kids in a mask looking away from each other, best. You know, what is that telling you?
Wow.
I mean, that's what this is about, a takedown. So, and the other, it's just horrible psychological takedown, but it's not without actual damage. You know, just physiologically, they never tell you. When I went to the big thing in Omaha, all the University of Nebraska specialists were on the other side, and they did not say one thing about the risks of wearing a mask, but there's risk. One of the big ones is carbon dioxide retention. Now, it doesn't maybe happen. I tell people, if you've got to wear a mask, wear the twinkiest, most worthless mask you can. Those little things with little ear loops that are blue paper, they don't keep out anything, including snot. I don't know if I can say that, but you know, it just doesn't keep out anything. So they're not obstructing your air, your circulation as much. But you put on a cloth mask, or worse yet, you put on one of those N95 masks that they're forcing our nurses to wear 8 hours a day some places, in the ICU, for example. Now, here's the problem with that. It's not the oxygen flow per se. It's the CO2 retention. So the OSHA says you can only have CO2 up to 1,000 or 2,000 parts per million. And above that, it's toxic. Okay. 1,000 for any prolonged period. Well, I have a friend with a CO2 monitor, and she showed that these cloth and go way above that. And that at one point, one of these N95, I think it was an N95 mask, was 10,000 parts per million. It just doesn't work, but it makes you sick. You know, during the outbreak, a paper came out showing that some types of lung cancer have higher levels of their oral bacteria in their lung. Now, think about what happens when you put on a mask and you're constantly breathing your own oral bacteria. You know, it's just one thing after another here. And that may be one of the things this year we're seeing, not just a viral outbreak, because I'm hearing doctors all over the country, and I'm one of them too, that says ivermectin doesn't seem to be working as well as now. Well, if you're wearing a mask and you're rebreathing, other things can get in there. And there are things like mycoplasma pneumonia and these weird strep organisms and things that can get into your lung in a constantly wet environment, which is what you got in a mask, that only can be treated with things like doxycycline or Bactrim. And that's what mm-hmm. we're starting to see. So I think the masks are doing a lot of harm, but the most is to our children. You know, it's psychologically damaged to our children. And I used to put up with people saying, when people said to me, well, I know I'm just wearing the mask, so I don't want to be, you know, confrontational. Now, I used to let people buy with that. But now what I say to them, I say, you know, we're at war. This is a war against your children. And if you wear the mask, unfortunately, you're participating in that war against children. That's really what it is.
So in closing, doctor, I want to get really broad now. Who's behind this? What is the agenda? You say we're at war. What does success look like for them? Who's really behind this, and why are they doing this?
Yeah, I know. That's not an easy thing to say in a few minutes. But, you know, and again, this is my speculation. You can have your own speculation. First of all, it's people with a lot of money, because a lot of money, the way it worked, a lot of money was poured through these foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation and Gates Foundation. And there are a lot more than that that poured into the NIH. And over 40 years, Tony Fauci had over $800 billion allocation authority, and he used it to basically control the hospitals and to spent $120 billion toward, and David Martin outlines this with the patents, to getting all these different labs. Like I say, it isn't just the Chinese. They're just one action arm here. But getting all these different labs to take things out of nature and through gain-of-function research and genetic manipulation, make them dangerous to humans. That, you know, so you've got to look at that. Now, who would pay for that kind of thing? Well, there, you know, since time immemorial, we've been talking about depopulation. And Plato said, you know, wanted to use disease for depopulation. I'm sorry, but that's an obvious potential threat here. But in terms of who the people are that could be doing this, you know, in 2011, there was a guy named Gladfelter, and he looked at all the corporations in the world, 37 million plus corporations, put them in a supercomputer and found they were all owned by 149 or 147 companies. And then those were owned, according to Forbes, those 147 were owned by 10 banks, which were then owned by four big funds. Those are controlled by about 150 men. Apparently, women need not apply. So I would personally look there. I'd look at those 150 men that we don't even know their names, because somebody's pulling strings at a very high level to do this. And that you can prove that looking at the PCR test. Every hospital and every lab manager didn't have a sudden psychotic fit in 2020 and not be able to do their job in producing a reliable test. Every lab all over the world overcycled these tests. And I read the thing, how to do it. It clearly tells you 20 to 30 cycles at the most, 25 to 35. So they all did it, and they all did it wrong in exactly the same way all over the world. That takes a transnational conspiracy. There's no other way to look at it, unless you believe in the worldwide group psychology or psychosis of lab managers. That's another possibility, I guess.
Well, that's a deeper topic for us to get into. Well, Dr. Merritt, thank you for your time. DrLeeMerritt.com. And so just to, in closing, how should people fight back against the mandatory vaccines? How do they fight back against the workplace bullying that's happening? There are people that are emailing me that said, you know, Charlie, I got my kid vaccinated because I don't want to deal with it anymore. What are they supposed to do about all this stuff?
Right. Don't do that. That's not the right move, because you've just made a lifetime problem that for something that is not going to be a lifetime problem. These guys, you know, Boris Yeltsin once said, you can sit on a throne of bayonets, but you can't sit on it for long. The lie is coming apart. Do not take a vaccine now and die in 10 years or 5 years or 3 years when you could have stood up. Everybody's got to take off the mask, turn off the TV, don't do social distancing, which is everything but social. Take back our humanity. We have to take back our humanity, which is getting rid of those things. And then what you have to do is just say no to all this. Yes, you might lose your job, but let me tell you something. If you're a nurse in a hospital where they're killing people by omission and commission, and they're lying to people about these vaccines and other things, do you really want to still be a part of that? It's a time to do something else. I don't care what it is. Auschwitz wasn't run just by Himmler or by Eichmann. It was run by all the little people just doing their jobs to keep a paycheck and just following along and doing their work. Don't be doing that now. Everybody's got to stand up and say no. And when that happens, it's going to go away. Now, it may not go away without a fight. I'm hoping we can get out of this without blood in the streets, but we're not there yet. But I think we can if we just all group together. What we can't do is wait, because if we get put in our homes again, they will come, pick us off. They can potentially pick us off, not to sound too paranoid, but we've seen it, like the Cheka, you know, come quietly, neighbors, don't disturb, or don't come quietly, don't disturb the neighbors. You don't want to be alone in your house when they start pulling you in and say you must be vaccinated.
And that's where we're headed. Dr. Merritt, thank you so much for your time. DrLeeMerritt.com. Appreciate it very much. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And thank you so much for supporting our program at charliekirk.com.
patreon.com/support. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.